It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk about Top Gun Maverick. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Kari.
Howdy.
And John.
Hey.
And joining us later will be our other host, Stevie P. But for now, we have a special guest who everyone will remember from our Monday episodes. Niatifa is here today to talk to us about Top Gun Maverick.
How's it going, Dunks?
Thanks for joining us, Niatifa. So we are excited to bring to you another edition of the Sunday Movie Squad episodes. This is the second episode in our monthly series where we are joining together to talk about whatever the hell we want, really. But we'll maybe solidify something at a later date, a little more concrete. We're thinking that everyone might have a topic. So John will have a topic. I'll have a topic. Kari, Stevie, we'll all have a topic, and then we'll be able to pick movies based on that, potentially, but we'll get back to you later on that. For now, just enjoy these every first Sunday of every month. Here on GDT, we also have four weekly episodes. On Friday, we have our full-length episode where we interview an independent filmmaker or someone else involved in the independent filmmaking process. This Friday, we had an interview with Levon J. Polinelli, who gave a great discussion with us about all of his work and his future work as well, so check that out if you missed it. In addition to those full episodes, we also have the bonus episodes on Monday that I just referenced. Niatifa hosts those, and we go through the short film that Kari, myself, and others are working on here at GDT and outside of GDT to bring to you guys eventually. Should be done soon. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, check out those Monday episodes. We have interviews with the cast, crew, everyone involved in the making of Nostalgia, our short film. If you want to check out more about that also, check out nostalgiamemoriesoftomorrow.com, a website dedicated to the short film. In addition to that, we also have another bonus episode releasing every Tuesday with the Marvel Podcasting Universe. In those episodes, we go through the MCU movie by movie, and this week we are up to Thor. Last week we did Iron Man 2, and those episodes are hosted by myself, Jalen, Mac, and Chris. Like I said, we go through the MCU movie by movie on there, but also anytime there's a new superhero property, we'll be discussing that. So when season 3 of The Boys, for example, wraps up, we'll be having an episode on that instead of an MCU episode that week. And when Thor 4 drops, I know that is a Marvel Universe movie, but we'll be doing that when it drops instead of going through the MCU movie by movie that week. So anytime there's a new TV show, movie, or anything else relevant to the superhero genre dropping, we'll be putting the MCU on hold and doing that for the week. Those are our Tuesday episodes. In addition to those, we also have a Thursday bonus episode, which is just our regular bonus episode where we talk about a new movie, a new TV show, something relevant, or we have a guest on to talk about one of their favorite movies. Right now, we're doing a mini-series on Kenobi, the new Disney Plus Star Wars show. So last week, we did episode 3 of that show, and this week, it'll be episode 4. So get excited for those, and once that's done, we'll get back to just something else relevant, whatever we really want to do, on those Thursday bonus episodes. Those are our four weekly episodes, and on top of that, we have this Sunday Movie Squad episode that releases the first Sunday of every month. So stay tuned for all of our future episodes and check out our back catalog. We have about 80 episodes for you to listen to now, so get excited for all that and stay tuned for whatever we come out with next. Like I said, today we are discussing Top Gun Maverick, the 2022 film starring Tom Cruise. This is a quick warning for you, a spoiler warning. We will be discussing all the events of the movie, and we'll be discussing the events of the first Top Gun film as well. So if you have not seen either film, they are going to be spoiled. So turn this off now, get caught up with those films, then get back to us. For everyone else, that was your spoiler warning. So Top Gun Maverick, like I said, was released in 2022, and if you're listening to this in June, it should still be in theaters right now. The movie stars Tom Cruise reprising his role from the original film and is directed by Joseph Kosinski, written by Aaron Kruger, Eric Warren Singer, and Christopher McQuarrie, from a story by Peter Craig and Justin Marks. The film's a sequel, like I said, to the original Top Gun, which was released in 1986. And Tom Cruise is still playing Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell, which he played in the original. This film also stars Miles Teller, Jennifer Connelly, John Hamm, Glenn Powell, Lewis Pullman, Ed Harris, and Val Kilmer also reprises his role from the original film as Iceman. That's a little background on the film, and I will say that it is very much getting positive reception from both critics and definitely from the audiences. Moviegoers in general are saying good things about this, and it is the return of the blockbuster, a lot of people are also saying. So Tom Cruise has saved movies, folks. Here we are in 2022, and they are back. Scientology is real, and you are allowed to join that religion, not a cult. Just kidding, guys. We're not saying anything about Tom Cruise being a good guy, but we do want to get into our thoughts on his newest film, Top Gun Maverick. Let's start right now with our opening initial thoughts on Top Gun Maverick. Natsva, as our guest, you get to go first. What did you think broadly of the new 2022 Top Gun film?
Yeah, so I have a kind of a weird relationship with the first Top Gun. Like, I had a weird little phase where I probably watched it when I was like 14, 15, 16, something like that. And it made me want to be a fighter pilot. Like, I was full on into that shit until my mom, like, definitely pulled the plug on that. But I really liked the original, and I understand it wasn't like the best movie. Like, the dialogue was probably pretty trash and all that. But I think this latest iteration, like, stepped it up in a lot of ways, where the action cinematography was pretty insane. I love how they do their own stunts. I, much as I look at Tom Cruise side of it, being a Scientologist, I do look at him with a lot of respect for doing all of his own stunts and all that. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was not a really good, like, prestige movie, why don't we say, but it was one of the most fun movies I've seen in a really long time. And it was it paid really good homage to the first one without leaning on it too hard.
All right, very fair. Nice. Holding back too much praise, but we'll get into the specifics of what you do and don't like about it, Nyantava. Next up, we'll listen to John's initial thoughts of Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, so I don't have as much of a relationship to the first film as Nyantava. It was kind of something that I'd watch on and off on cable growing up. And, you know, it's not so fresh in my mind going into the sequel. But I think it's, you know, interesting to note this is the biggest Memorial Day box office weekend ever and biggest opening of Tom Cruise's career. And I think it's definitely worth the hype. I think the pacing was excellent. Like Nyantava said, the visuals were really top notch, and just, I felt like I was on the edge of my seat the whole movie. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and we'll dig in a little deeper shortly.
Okay. All right. So Kari, you're up next. What did you think broadly of Top Gun Maverick?
Goodness gracious. Great balls of fire. I mean, I love a great action movie, a great popcorn flick, and this kind of hit all the points I was looking for. I'll dive into my cliche breakdown that I'll have for the listeners later in the pod. But, you know, the opening scene just got my blood boiling right there. The fucking highway to the danger zone, hitting it with, you know, the same scene as the first Top Gun, you know, the montage of the planes taking off. I was ready to go from the opening jump. And, you know, it lived up to the hype. We talked about the film is very highly regarded. To Nyantava's point, it's a great advertisement to the U.S. Army. I was ready to bomb some brown people after watching it. So it really came through in that aspect. Slightly less homoerotic than I was looking for, so it didn't quite live up to the first film in that aspect. But every other way it came through, you know, it was jam-packed. It had all the action. It had the great cinematography. You know, it hit on all the points you wanted to hit on. It wasn't too long. You know, had some good acting. So I walked out of the film being very satisfied with the entertainment value. So I have some nitpicks that I'll get into in terms of things they could have done better. But when you go to see a film like Top Gun 2, you know, you just suspend a little bit of disbelief with regards to, like, the fine aspects of the storyline. So some things I'm willing to overlook. But overall, just you know, a great fun ride, and something I definitely recommend to other people who want to go see it.
All right, I am going to hold off on my comments until we have Stevie P on the show. So stay tuned, audience, for the later segment where you'll hear from both myself and Stevie P. But folks, let's get into the discussion of what happens in the film and what we do and don't like about it. We'll focus on what we do like about it, because here on GDT, we like to talk about movies we love, not the ones that we hate or what we hate about the ones we love. So what do we love about the beginning of this film? Kari spoke on it a little bit, but I'd love to hear a little bit more of the details and what got you guys going at the beginning here.
So, I mean, like Kari mentioned, I mean, from the opening scene, I looked over at my boy, and he knows how much I like the first Top Gun. I looked over at him and I was like, yeah, like, I'm about ready to be a fighter pilot again. Like, the danger zone, you know, you're giving the signals, they're taking off the carrier jet. It's like, yeah, I watched it in IMAX, so it was like a full-on experience. You're like, oh, you know, this shit is fucking crazy. And throughout the film, I think 80s films were really lovable for their corniness. Like when we would go back and watch them again, like we were like, oh, this shit is really corny, but we still enjoy it for, you know, whatever reason. But in my opinion, Top Gun Maverick took an 80s film ambiance and made it quite a bit less corny and easy to love with a straight face, if that makes sense. So just from the opening scene with the 80s music and that throughout, I liked how they paid. I liked Miles Teller's performance as Goose's son, and he looked a lot like Anthony Edwards. That was pretty striking. And the casting is really good. Just throughout, I thought it was a really entertaining film. And while, you know, in today's day and age, we're looking at films like Top Gun with a little bit more critical eye than we have in the past. And I'm by no means a gung-ho, you know, rah-rah America First kind of guy. But I mean, this shit was just a fun movie.
I will say that Edwards and Cruise are both the same age, and Edwards looks like Cruise's character in Tropic Thunder.
Really?
No disrespect. I'm just saying we're not all Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
There's a reason Tom Cruise is the one still highlighting movies, you know what I mean?
That's the Scientology for you.
Yeah. Tom Cruise looks probably like 40. There's something in those, what is it, Cleons or Theons or whatever it is.
Some adrenochrome, maybe.
Did you see what the actor who played his original girl said about why she wasn't called back for Top Gun 2?
She looks too old.
She's like, I'm old and I'm fat now. And I'm not saying anything about that. She's saying that, but
she said it, not us.
Yeah, you can definitely do your own research on that. It's funny that, like, you know, if Tom Cruise is like almost 6 years old and, you know, still able to do that, it's like, if you make a certain amount of money in Hollywood, you don't really age. Men and women, I would say, so.
He looked like he was having a lot of fun filming this movie. Like, I thought that he was having a lot of fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly them up in those, like, fighter jets. The director puts the camera in there, but the actors are in charge of, like, setting it up. Like, they're, I don't know how much they're actually flying it, but they're definitely in the planes. Like, Tom Cruise is doing some of the flying himself. It looks like he's having fun. I mean, he's actually flying the plane, so I'm sure it's a great time.
Do you know if they were flying F-18s or were they flying other jets that they dressed up to look like F-18s? Because they were flying, if Tom Cruise is flying an F-18, that's fucking nuts.
They were definitely flying the planes for part of it. I don't know. There were definitely other people flying it. So they're like cuts during some of the more, you know, intricate segments. But
right,
when they're like taking off, when they're in the air and it's cutting to him, he's actually flying the plane.
That's crazy.
I think it actually might have been for this movie. I'm not sure if it was or wasn't, but for one of his recent films, they were filming for like 30 something. That might even be an under. I'm trying to like lower the number so I don't shoot too high. So like, I'm going to say 30 something straight days, and I might've been more. And it was his like birthday weekend. They're like, all right, man, you want the weekend off? And he's like, no, I was thinking like that Saturday is actually, his birthday was on the Saturday. This is the perfect time for this like 5 hour like flight training thing that we need to do. And the director's like, really, man? Like, you don't want to? I'm fucking burnt out. And Tom Cruise is like, nah, that's what I want to do on my birthday. He's like, I'd rather do nothing on my birthday but make a movie. So I would have to say that you're probably right. He's absolutely fucking loving it.
Good for Tom Cruise.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Niazafa hit the nail on the head with that. Just kind of the retro feel was captured really well, but it was also, you know, brought up to current day nicely with, you know, the shooting style. And, you know, just I think you're right. It captured that nostalgia that we all have for that. The movies coming out of that era, but made it feel, you know, fresh and new, which is really, you know, remarkable for a sequel to such a, you know, well-known movie. We've seen it done poorly in recent years, and, you know, franchises aren't always able to be revived, but I think this was pretty masterfully done. But yeah, no, I think it really set the tone nicely.
So why don't you guys tell our audience about the, because we talked about the beginning, but what is the setup for the movie? Where are we going with the plot? Because we've said that maybe not the most plot heavy movie. We're not like, when we say it was great, we're not necessarily saying the plot was great. So where does this movie take you from the beginning in this first act? And what do we think about that? And is it really just where we are only here for the action?
It kind of sets up a very loose plot in the beginning. It dives into it pretty quickly, similar to the first Top Gun. So the first Top Gun, they set up pretty quickly, like, oh, you know, God damn it, Maverick, your bad attitude, but God damn, you're such a good pilot. and you got to go to Top Gun. It's a similar kind of setup here where they're like, ah, oh, I want to fire you, but damn, you're so good. And there's a mission only you can complete. And they send him off to train these pilots for this impossible mission. So they kind of, within the first like 10 minutes after some very brief exposition where they show that he's still the same like gung-ho, you know, play by his own rules kind of guy. Once they set that up, then they dive right into the plot. So they let you know where it's going pretty early. I just want to take this opportunity now while I'm speaking to dive into some of the cliches that I documented. I love a good action movie. I mean, I think we were talking about this a little bit at the beginning, but I think this movie definitely played into a lot of like the cliches for like a good, mostly cop movies follow this kind of formula, but it did the same way, but it actually did it pretty well. Like the, you know, your kind is going extinct. Mission that no one comes back from. You know, it's the last post coming out of retirement. There's the grumpy sergeant who fights him the whole way and then gives him like the nod of approval at the end. You know, there's the point where he's doing the mission and he does it his own way and he gets removed and they're like, God damn it, give me your badge and your gun. And he puts it on the table, then he does something so gung-ho that he's like, God damn it, Maverick, I want to fire you, but you're the only man for the job. And then they bring him back in and then he leads them to victory. So it had all the classic cliches of any good like cop army movie, but I was along for the ride the whole way. So I guess back to your original question, Duncan, it sets up the plot pretty quickly, a little bit of exposition, like 10 minutes, and then it dives right into like, only you can solve this problem. And he's like, you're right.
Yeah, I was sitting there during the exposition period, like, when is he going to get back to Top Gun? Because it did seem almost entirely unrelated. I didn't really like the exposition for that little first 10 minutes. It was okay. I mean, I was like, okay, shit. First of all, like, Mach 10, isn't that like 7,000 miles an hour? I was sitting there thinking, like, you know, what the hell is this guy doing? And it seems so unrelated to the greater plot retrospectively. Yeah, 7,500 miles an hour. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a rehashing of this thing and we're going to go to space and do all this wild shit. But it had nothing to do with the rest of the movie. And other than to be like, okay, Maverick still really misses Goose. And he's still a man who has no regard for his own personal well-being. And I thought you could have done that without being so outlandish in the beginning. But hey, I mean, it was pretty cool to see Tom Cruise back in action at the end of the day. So, I mean, from a storyboard standpoint, it's like, what the fuck is this? But from a this is pretty sick standpoint, that was pretty badass.
I think it was worth it for the diner scene, though. That got a big laugh in the show.
Yeah.
The little kid being like, when he's like, where am I? Earth. That was funny.
Yeah, it was good.
So we're getting a lot of praise for not only Cruise as an action star, but Kaczynski as an action director. And people are saying that not only was Oblivion a good film, but so was maybe Tron Legacy unfairly criticized. A lot of people say it's better than the original Tron, which people are also saying about this Top Gun film, that it is better than the original Top Gun, potentially. Presented without any comment from me, I'm just saying that that's what some people are saying. He also is known for the Mad World Gears of War trailer commercial, if anyone's familiar with that, as well as the Starry Night Halo 3 commercial. Those are two very famous ones. The Mad World one won a bunch of awards and definitely got me and my dad interested in playing Gears of War. So just a little note on Kaczynski, but he's done, interestingly, a lot of work with CGI in the past, and this is obviously noted for being practical effects heavy. He directed like things like those video game commercials were all CGI, obviously. But it's interesting that someone who is known now for such practical effects in Tom Cruise, and he's collaborated with him twice, and he's also working with Macquarie, who's a frequent collaborator with Cruise on this for the story. And people are saying that maybe Macquarie had some ghost directing, which is always unfair to the real director. But I was wondering if you guys had any comments on the directing style and if that's shown through at all in maybe like an artistic avenue here.
I'm glad you brought up that background because I didn't know that. But I thought while I was watching, when they were showing kind of the flight plan, I guess, I don't know what the correct term is, but sort of the, you know, mission plan. And they had this, you know, 3D modeling of, you know, the different flight formations going up over the mountain. And so I just thought it was so cool. So I think maybe his video game background did come into play there because it was just like really realistic and like high tech looking. It was just really, really cool.
That was cool. That scene where the whole time they're trying to like, oh, we got to do it in 2.5 minutes under 100 square feet in the air and no one can do it. And they're like, oh my God, is that Tom Cruise's like little blip on the thing? That was like my favorite scene in the movie where it's like, oh my God, he's going to do it. And he like clocks it at like 206 or whatever. And the way they were able to show it with like the like 3D graphic, I think it was really well done. So it probably did play into his like video game experience a little bit.
Yeah, that was like easily the most exciting scene in the film, I think. It was so predictable. Because you're right, Kari, it is such a cop movie trope. Like, oh my God, would you look at this guy? He's doing police work the way that only the good police know how to do it. The old school guys. And it was so predictable, but it was so exciting. Like the direction of switching back and forth from Tom Cruise looking like he's all of however many years old, switching back and forth to the young guys, you know, in the situation room or wherever, like watching him do it, like standing up and cheering for him. It was just so fun. And then that coupled with the graphics and they showed, I don't know how many times, this angle of attack, and you have to go through the canyon this way, and you're looking at it like, holy shit, you know, this looks pretty difficult with me never having flown a plane before. And then they show you how the G's that they're pulling and all that stuff. And it was very video gamey, but in such a good way.
Yeah. One thing I'll call out there is that sometimes these movies that are about aspects that, you know, the average person can't really relate to, obviously none of us has like flown a fighter jet, they create it in a way where we can't really understand what's going on. But they did a really good job of conveying, like, you know, you have to come in at this angle and go down this angle and hit this point and then shoot it up, to where I felt like I had a great understanding of like what they had to do going into the final mission. So I think they did a really good job of like breaking down the mission to like, you know, layman's terms.
Yeah, like even if you didn't understand like what G-forces were, you were sitting there with a pretty good understanding from having watched the film of this could kill somebody. I think they even went to explain it like, you know, you're pulling 10 G's, it's like 2,000 pounds of force on your chest or something like that. Like, obviously, it's really pedantic and nobody would explain that in an actual situation that they were in. But for the benefit of the audience, I think it was really good.
Yeah, I got a very not related question for you all who, I guess you all on the pod, but how did you guys feel about the Val Kilmer scene? I thought it was actually very well done, but I'm curious to hear what, I guess, John, you said you haven't seen the first one in a while. A little bit of background, I guess, for anyone who doesn't know. So Val Kilmer had cancer in 2015, had like a tracheotomy and had like his vocal cords removed, so he can't really speak.
And he was super excited to be a part of the movie too.
That's why I was curious to see how you guys took it. I actually thought they did a pretty good job.
Given the circumstances, yeah, no, I'm very happy that was included.
Knowing what I very recently learned about Val Kilmer and his condition and how adamant that he was that, you know, he really wanted the Maverick scene, I thought it was really cool that they included him in the movie. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, like, I thought Maverick was cool on first watch, like when I was 15 years old or whatever. But Iceman was the shit. Like, you know, he chomped in that dude's face. I don't know. He was such an asshole, like in a movie, like in a way that you don't see assholes in movies anymore, you know. And I thought he was really cool. And, you know, you saw him and Maverick's relationship develop over time. And I guess that just got completely fleshed out where in the movie, they're talking about how Iceman is like Maverick's biggest advocate, et cetera, et cetera. So it is like a payoff in the end to where you may wonder, having watched Top Gun, the first Top Gun, of where the relationship develops. And, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate. Everything that's going on with Val Kilmer, you know, is pretty unfortunate. But that's such a big fan payoff, and knowing what's going on with Val Kilmer, it's such a good payoff for him as well. So that's really cool to see. Without knowing what was going on with Val Kilmer, I probably would have thought it was unnecessary. But I thought it was really cool for the audience and for Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I actually just recently learned about that as well, and not knowing about his condition and seeing the movie, I was kind of wondering, you know, why they went to such lengths with, you know, him typing. And just now finding out that they used a lot of complex AI to be able to recreate his voice. But, you know, knowing what he's gone through in real life, I think, you know, it was such a triumph to be able to, you know, give him that opportunity. Like, as an actor, I can't even imagine losing your instrument like that. And, you know, he can't speak. So for the technology to be able to give him that back, even, you know, for a moment, I think that's so cool that he was able to have like the screen time and be able to reprise his role and kind of just like reclaim his career. I think that's really dope that they did that. And like you said, just great for the fans and for the franchise.
Yeah. I actually read somewhere that Tom Cruise, the method actor he is, actually learned how to text for those scenes. So he's really good. But no, I like the scenes. I thought they were tasteful. I didn't understand why he had to die. I guess it's kind of like an emotional reckoning for Maverick, but didn't really seem necessary to me. I would have preferred to have like Tom Cruise saves the day. And maybe, you know, he can't speak, but Val Kilmer's just there and he gives like a fist bump or something. And like, I would have preferred that to like the funeral scene. And they could have really had some other catalyst to Tom Cruise's kind of emotional epiphany in like the end of the second act. So I don't know if we really needed that, but I thought it was a good job. I was very like tearful. I was like tearing up a little bit during the Val Kilmer scenes. And then I did some online research about how difficult Val Kilmer was to work with on like every film he's ever done. It was a little less sad, but still, I think a great job by the director, and you know, very tasteful, and I thought he did a good job. So I'm glad I included.
Yeah, I feel like given everything that he has going on with his life, I feel like perhaps they shouldn't have killed him. I think that's a bit morbid. You know, I think that, yeah, it would have been nice in that payoff scene in the end where we're seeing the new Iceman and Maverick in Rooster and Hangman. You know, it would have been really cool to see the original Iceman and Maverick hugging it out and, you know, doing their salutes and, you know, this, that, the other thing in the end as well. I would rather have seen Val Kilmer do that rather than John Hamm, who, I mean, he didn't even really necessarily need to be in the movie in the first place, to be honest with you.
Really? I had that take about Ed Harris.
He didn't need to be in the movie at all.
Ed Harris came in for like one scene.
Yeah, he did not need to be in the movie.
Would like fly the jet over his head, and then he like doesn't come up again. And they like showed him during the end of the movie, and I was like, oh yeah, he was in the movie. Like, why was he in the movie?
Yeah.
I thought John Hamm actually did a good job as like the surgeon who's like, God damn it, you stay in line.
Yeah.
I thought he did an okay job.
Yeah, see, I don't think you need two of those guys, because you had both John Hamm and Ed Harris playing that role.
Ed Harris would have been better, I think, in that role.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're both graduates of Top Gun who don't like the idea of having future fighter pilots doing this thing. Like, okay, sure. Do you really need two of them? Probably not.
No. Good segue, though, Niatafa, into the ending of the film. I have some thoughts about how they ended it, but I want to hear Niatafa, John, your guys' take on like the last act and how they kind of wrapped it up.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're going to leave aside how they feel like it's a good idea to bomb a country without warning and be secretive about it, like if we're going to leave that aside, you know, what is the secrecy? What is the secrecy necessary for if you're going to just bomb a country's stuff? We all knew that Tom Cruise was going to live. I figure there's going to be a Top Gun 3. And I was sitting there thinking like, oh, okay, maybe he's going to survive. Maybe he's not. Maybe they just set it up for Miles Teller and Hangman, whatever his name is.
It's Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell. Yeah, I thought they were just going to set it up. Once he went down, I was like, okay, they're probably not going to kill Tom Cruise, but it would be okay for the franchise if they killed Tom Cruise and let Miles Teller and Glenn Powell take it over, because it's been, what, like 30, 40 years since the original film. But it was a little bit contrived, and we all knew that when they flew off in the F-14, we all knew that Hangman was going to come and save their lives. It was a little bit contrived, but that didn't make it any less fun. Like, I knew what was going to happen the whole time, but I was still enjoying every fucking second of it. Like, them being in the forest, little comedic relief where he was like, what the fuck are you doing here? He said, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, this, that, the other thing. Like, it was pretty fun. And I don't have any real gripes with it for that, because at the end of the day, it is an action movie. But I didn't necessarily think that there needed to be the whole deal with, okay, Maverick is doing this for Goose and Goose's son. And he also feels like at the same time, it's a good idea to wrap another person into this thing just before going off on an impossible mission. I was sitting there thinking like, what are you doing, man? But that's just the magic of cinema, I guess, how it still ended up being fun. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it would have been better if we didn't see Hangman coming, and if he didn't ask, you know, can I go help them, and then be given the order no, because then obviously, you know, he's going to defy the order and go help them. Like, right. If he just popped up randomly, that would have been pretty cool. And then also them just kind of running straight through all the chaos and just grabbing the plane, no issue, is kind of funny to me. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed the ending.
I was taking notes during the film. I totally missed that scene where Hangman runs to ask if he can help and they say no, because that makes a lot more sense. I was going to have go on this whole like Deus Ex Machina tangent, but it sounds like it wasn't completely out of nowhere. But I thought the ending in the third act was really good. I love the whole invasion of the whatever. Do they even name the country? I think they left it.
No, they don't.
No name.
By design, for sure.
They didn't want to anger anyone. So like, oh, this other, just the others. That's yeah. Not even know. It's bad for bad guys. Because as they're doing it in the group of two, and the first one like shoots and hits the thing, you know if the second missile is going to jam. So I'm like, there's no way this next missile works. That's just not how it works. So I thought the whole thing was pretty well done. I actually didn't see it coming that like both Tom Cruise and Miles Teller would end up like stranded in the winter. I guess they're implying Russia. I don't know. They kind of met each other up. It was a little like Star Wars homage-y. I don't know if anyone else thought that, but like they're in the snow. They're like looking over the mountain and hijacking like a ship. It was very like Han Solo, Luke Skywalker-y to me, which I thought was kind of cool. But the biggest gripe I have with the ending was that they really, I think, missed an opportunity to just have Maverick go out on top. This guy is supposed to be the greatest pilot basically in the world at this point, and they're fighting like this last, you know, ship, right? And he's like, oh, we got no more flares, we got no more bullets. And earlier in the fight scene, they were fighting one of those jets, and they did the little jet thing where it froze for a second, you know, and like hovered in air. And they were like, what the fuck was that? So I thought, perfect ending. They're fighting this last thing. They fire some bullets. It like hovers in midair. And Tom Cruise is like, you got to eject. And like they all like, and then they shoot their plane into the other plane and like eject at the last moment to blow it up without any bullets. Like Bruce Willis throwing the car into the helicopter in Die Hard 4. That would have been way more satisfying to me than like someone else swooping in and saving the day, which I think is always kind of a cop-out. I'd rather just, you know, the main character kind of gut their way out of it. But overall, I thought the ending was pretty solid. The whole third act was really just keeps you on your toes. I mean, they build up to it, the whole film, this big invasion. And I thought I think it did a pretty good job of living up to it. One of the only other downsides I'll note is that they kind of teased it a little bit like, oh, Rooster doesn't do a good job of like seizing the opportunity. But they didn't really like flesh that out fully to where I wasn't like, where when he's like hesitating at the end and then he came through and like seized on the opportunity, it didn't feel as meaningful because it was just kind of a thinly fleshed out part of the plot, which I think is true with a lot of the supporting pilots. I think they could have like, I think I needed one more scene with the rest of the pilots like shooting the shit maybe, and we just learn a little bit more about them, because like, you know, Bob and Phoenix and who the other people, like Hangman, like I couldn't tell you anything about the rest of the pilots. Like, there should have been one more scene where we just know like, oh, Bob's doing it for his dad, and Phoenix and Miles Teller used to have a relation. Like, give me like one more scene where I have a little bit more investment in these other pilots, because outside of like the one scene in the bar, like, I couldn't tell you anything about any of the other pilots. But yeah, I thought the ending was solid. What would your guys' call sign be? Kill shot.
Kill shot. That's a good one.
That's a lot to live up to, but
Rainmaker.
Oh, that's good. That's dope. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. You guys are good. I can't beat those. Can't think of anything good.
Maybe Chief.
I'll take it.
I don't know if anyone else has this thought, but whenever I watch a Tom Cruise movie, I always look at how they play the angles, make him look not so short.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. In reality, he's the same height as like David Spade. Like Tom Cruise is not. He's a very small man, but
ricochet shot at David Spade.
Yeah, no offense to David Spade, but if you ever see David Spade sit next to anybody, he's not towering over them. But they always shoot Tom Cruise from these angles. Like when he's next to Miles Teller, you never see them. Like it's like one and then the other. It's never like, because Miles Teller is like 10 inches taller. So it would just look like
comical. Yeah.
He's talking to a child. Yeah. So it's always very creative how they shoot him to make him seem like this big, like burly guy when he's like 5'6" and change.
I've had like some recent experiences with motorcycles or whatever, and I'm sitting there looking at this guy driving this like pretty big fucking bike. And I'm like, dude, there's no way he can put his feet on the ground. And I look at it closely. He's wearing these cowboy boots with like 2-inch heels, and I'm sure he's got some lifts in them. You know, because you can't really ride a motorcycle if you can't put your feet on the ground on both sides. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, there's just no fucking way. And then I see his cowboy boots, and I'm like, yeah, okay. That's the magic of cinema right there.
Yeah, there's one scene where him and Rooster have, like, the face-off where he's like, why'd you pull my papers? And they cut to, for half a second, they're standing face-to-face. And I'm like, 100% he's standing on something. Yeah. They're, like, 3 inches apart in height. And I'm like, Miles Teller's, like, 6'2", and Tom Cruise is, like, 5'6". Like, there's no way they can even see each other face-to-face. But they did a pretty good job. He showed this to someone who didn't know who Tom Cruise was. They'd be like, what's Tom Cruise? Like, 5'10", 5'11"? Like, no, not quite. What are the thoughts on the love interest?
Well, to your point earlier, like, that he needed a different emotional catalyst, I feel like they could have done more with that and the daughter. Like, it didn't have to be, what did they end up using? I'm blanking now. What was the death of Iceman? But it could have been, you know, something that, you know, a near-death experience with her, the daughter, or something that makes that real and makes him realize, like, oh, this career and sacrificing, like, this family life I could have, you know, it's not worth it. I need to, like, reprioritize, whatever. Like, I think that kind of could have been the source for something, you know, that changes his mind. But it really wasn't. I thought that actress, Jennifer Connelly, was great, though. And, yeah, she's cool, so...
Yeah, I feel like the movie could have given Maverick a little bit more. I think we expect a little bit more of our heroes in the way that movies are shot today, a little bit more fleshing out. And we expect to see a little bit of depth, you know, oh, this guy's a family man. Like, he cares about X, Y, and Z. And maybe that's by design, but it seems like Tom Cruise literally only gives a shit about flying airplanes fast as shit. And that's cool, you know, but it doesn't make me have more of an affinity for Maverick. You know, he would be a little bit more relatable if he was having, you know, some cognitive dissonance, like, oh, I could have my life with this, you know, this family, like you said, John, but I just feel this duty or something like that, you know, and have him struggle a little bit. But it was just, I don't want my godson to fly planes because he could die. And that's a little bit less relatable because he's a grown-ass man who can decide to fly whatever the fuck he wants. You know, there was some cognitive dissonance there, and we saw a little bit of a struggle with him. But I think it would have been a little bit more relatable if he was like, oh, I have this duty to my family and or the family life that I could have. But instead, I choose to be this unmarried man that flies fast and chases after the 40-year-old ghost of my ex-wing man. You know, it's a little bit less relatable, I think, than him. Like, if I'm writing the movie, I mean, perhaps, like, that's probably very relatable to people in real life, you know, like people who may be in that situation in real life. But for the greater community who hasn't flown an airplane or who aren't involved in the military whatsoever, we can relate to, you know, caring about a family. So while it was cool and all, I mean, what was the point of him jumping out the window, her looking at him and being like, oh, don't break her heart again? Yeah. You would think the biggest way to break her heart is by dying in an impossible mission and who the fuck knows where.
Yeah, I think one of the main things they could have improved was the love interest. And I agree, John, I think Jennifer Connelly, she's a great actress, like, for this role. Like, she did a really good job. They just gave her, like, nothing. Like, the first interaction was already, like, they're starting on third base. She's like, oh, Tom, God, I love you so much. Why do you break my heart all the time? It's like, there's no buildup at all. There's no sexual tension. Like, I thought when he landed in that random town, he was going to, like, meet some woman and they were going to have some battle. Like, the benefit about him meeting someone who he has no past with is that it forces him to open up to them. Like, it forces some emotional, you know, needs to be emotionally available. Like, it just requires a little bit more investment from him than this old flame that he knows, but we, the audience, don't know. And then it just kind of was a little bit of a cop out. Like, it wasn't someone from the first film, but it also wasn't someone new. It was like, there's this woman that he hooked up before. Like, you don't know her, but trust me, they have something. It's like, all right, like, why? It was a little thinly thinly veiled, and then at the end he like goes to talk to her and she's like not there, and then she like comes the next day. It's like, what was the point of that?
Yeah, what that the fuck was any that? Sense
to me. She like showed up the next day with the car, and I was like, why not just be at the store? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. Like, the way they handled the love interest could have been so much better, I thought. Like, they could have forced him to open up. Maybe he's battling with, you know, middle age, and I want to, you know, leave, have a kid, have a family. I look at what Goose had, maybe I want that. And it just, I think I kind of wasted an opportunity with a great actress, you know, an interesting part. And they just kind of, they kind of whiffed on it, in my opinion.
There's like no character development. I would have dealt with the movie being 20 minutes longer if there was any kind of character development, but there's really not.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, honestly, now that you brought it up that she wasn't at the bar, like I totally forgot about that. That would have been a good place for everything to kind of come together at the end and do kind of like the piano scene that they even referenced and like use direct footage from the original. Have, you know, Miles Teller, Tom Cruise, her there, they're all playing the piano, having a great time. Like, come on, missed opportunity. You're right.
Actually, now that you bring it up, that's one of my, I have a few nitpicks about the movie that I'll get into, but that's one of mine. So in the original, Tom Cruise and Ed, whatever, they're playing the piano, you know, they're playing Great Ball of Fire, and they do it again in the movie here. How do all of the people know the words to that song? That song came out in 1957, and we're just supposed to believe that everyone...
They've seen Top Gun.
Everyone in the bar knows every single word to Great Ball of Fire. Like this, like even when they sing it in the original Top Gun, it was just Tom Cruise and Goose. And now everyone in the bar is like singing along. They pull the plug on the jukebox, like some 80s movie, and suddenly everyone knows the words. Come on, really?
I kind of felt like Miles Teller's character subjects them to that like almost every day, and they've been kind of forced to learn the words. And that's why it's like such a thing in town, only because of him. But
it's like, oh, okay, it's rooster time. Rooster's had 4 or 5 beers. He's gonna pull a plug from the jukebox. Here we go again.
Well, if we're getting to the end of the discussion, do you guys have any big things you want to get into before you wrap up your thoughts and give your ratings?
Yeah, I really agree with all of Kari's nitpicks. I think that that's what's stopping this movie from being like a truly excellent piece of film, like certain action films can certainly be. I'm not asking for, you know, The Sopranos here, but a little bit of character development certainly would have hurt. And we're watching these people fly the planes. It's pretty fucking sick, but we're watching a movie at the end of the day because we're connecting with these characters. Like, everybody knows who Maverick is. Even if you haven't seen Top Gun, you know who Maverick is. And it's crazy how the greatest piece of character development was from somebody who could not speak. A lot of respect to Val Kilmer, you know, but at the end of the day, he has the personal life that's most fleshed out. And perhaps, I mean, all of the action scenes were really cool, and I really loved watching them. But in order to make this a truly excellent movie, I think we could have done with a little bit more character development.
Yeah, I'll wrap up my points before my final thoughts. But I really enjoyed this movie. And to Niatova's point, I think what prevented it from being a great movie was a few key things, you know, the character development. To my point earlier, just one scene, give me the pilots shooting the shit over beer. And, you know, I forget the name of the tall black guy. Maybe he's like, oh, you know,
Jay Ellis.
My father. Yeah, Jay Ellis's character. Like, oh, my father was a pilot. I'm doing it for him. And there's like the, you know, Latino dude says something. And we just didn't get anything out of those characters to where I couldn't really be that emotionally invested in them.
Dude, they had two Asian characters named Harvard and Yale.
When they walk in, yeah, that group. Yeah, we just didn't get enough character development out of the pilots, not enough character development out of the love interests. Like, I would like, to Niatova's point, I'd be okay with 20 minutes longer, and I just care a little more about the characters. Like, I'm totally cool with that. There's a few scenes you could cut. Duncan, you mentioned this. They didn't bring back Meg Ryan, who is Miles Teller's mom. Bring her back and just have him like hug Miles Teller for one of the scenes, you know? She was in the first Top Gun. She said she wasn't even asked to reprise her role. It's a pretty small role, but I would like to see her again. And then a few just points of trivia before I get into my ending thoughts. One of the reasons the film was delayed, the first movie, Top Gun, was directed by Tony Scott, who is the brother of Ridley Scott, who jumped off a bridge in 2012 and killed himself, which pushed back the film a little bit. So part of the reason it had to come out later. Tom Cruise designed a 30-day boot camp for himself and all the other pilots to get them up to snuff, ready to fly the planes. They shot 800 hours of footage for the film, which is more hours of footage than The Lord of the Rings, not the first one, but the entire trilogy. So a lot of footage they had for the movie. So shout out to the director. So there's a few points to note. But yeah, so overall, you know.
Shout out to the editor.
Yeah, shout out to the editor. It's a lot of work. I'm sure they have like three other films. They probably have the sequel already in there. Which actually, when they brought the script to Tom Cruise, they had two options with how they could take it. One being a battle between him and Rooster, which is how they went. And then the other one was like Tom Cruise is involved in some like dark crusader, dark force fighter pilot thing as an older guy and how he navigates that. So I think they made the right call with a little call back to the first film. But yeah, overall, really good film, but you know, a little short of great.
I just want to riff a little bit about how ridiculous the idea that you could play offense and defense on football at the same fucking time. What the fuck was that?
Oh, that should have been my nitpicks. What did that mean? He was like, they're all playing offense and defense, and they're like hugging and throwing the football. And I'm like, dude, there's no way the fighter pilots wouldn't be competitive. And they're all like, Bob, Bob, Bob.
Yeah, right? You got this guy, Bob, who is cool. I fuck with Bob. They made his character really likable. But at the same time, what is he doing on a football field, buddy?
Hi, Bob.
That scene had like Tom. I almost included that, but I didn't. Tom Cruise like thrown into double coverage at one point. Like, all right, over like two defenders.
Yeah.
He was like outrunning them at one point, like a short pass, like a 10-yard like check down. And he's like running it to the end zone. It's like he's outrunning these 30-year-old like best shape like pilots. All right, come on. Just some very unrealistic football.
They were really liberal with the editing.
Yeah, they were. Very, he was like making catches over people. It's like, no chance. But yeah, that was an interesting scene. And her house happens to be right by the beach where they're playing too.
Not only that, but I mean, maybe this is getting too nitpicky, but dude, that Porsche that she was driving was like $125,000. Where is that coming from?
Yeah, she's asking Tom Cruise to cover the tab. She's driving that thing. She could afford a couple rounds of free beer.
Yeah, for real.
The bell ringing when it was like anyone puts their phone on the bar or disrespects a lady. I feel like that rule was broken and the bell wasn't rung. It was very inconsistent with the bell ringing.
That's a really good way to go out of business. I feel like, oh, you can't afford the beer at this establishment. We're going to have people throw you out.
Yeah, it was, you guys seen the first one where they kind of mirror that, except he chases a girl into the woman's bathroom.
Yeah, like, you can't do that anymore.
And then the next day he's like, oh, she's the captain. And then, yeah, there was a few things in the first one they couldn't get away with, but him like breaking into the woman's bathroom, be like, I need this. <It's weird. laughs> One of the things where it's like, they probably couldn't recreate that. Yeah,
this motherfucker's feloniously horny.
Yeah, he is.
The first one, he's such a dick. Tom Cruise is much better in the second one. The first one, I'm like, fuck this guy.
He's a lot more likable. I mean, it was crazy that you end up liking everybody in that movie but Tom Cruise. I felt like in the original,
I was like, too bad it was Goose.
Yeah, for real.
They never really explained how he died. At least I never understood it clearly.
I think he hit his head when he was ejecting.
Yeah, something like that.
But when I was watching it, I was confused. Like, why his son had so much beef with him other than like, oh, you were present while my father died, which seemed reasonable. But it seemed a little like he was a little too angry for that. It seemed like a little bit drummed up for cinema. But then,
yeah,
you know, the whole pulling the papers thing, it made a little bit more sense. But at the same time, I mean, fucking hell, I don't necessarily think that. I mean, Miles Teller was cool. Hangman was cool. Iceman was cool. Maverick was only cool in the second movie for brief periods of time, I feel like.
Now that I think about it, Maverick never rose above the level of the captain, yet he was able to pull the papers of Miles Teller's character and get him pulled out of the Navy. How the hell do they have the ability to do that?
Probably Iceman.
Had Iceman do it for him? Yeah, I guess so. Iceman was, to your point, he was pretty badass in the first one. Way better than Glenn Powell in this one.
You didn't like Powell? I'm like a toothpick guy. Like, I saw him and like I identified with him just off the toothpick. Like, I'm a big toothpick guy.
Yeah, so I saw him chewing one during the pod. No, I didn't think he Nothing with it, how the actor portrayed it, but the character was pretty thin. It was a dick, and then I guess saves her life. But
there's kind of some insane dick riding too, though. Like, he was like rebellious, like Maverick, but then at one point, like, way too, just giving way too much praise, telling Miles Teller's character, like, you have to do it exactly like him. Blah, blah, blah. That's the only way we're getting, like, get out of here. Like, what? It was just, yeah. But then he had a little redemption arc at the end.
Yeah, it's, you know, saved their life a little bit.
But we didn't even get to see him be like, oh, like, also, fuck these people. Like, we saw him assume that he was going to be made, like, or assume that he was going to make the team, and then he didn't make the team, and then all of a sudden he just ended up, he was the only person that was on the boat with the other guys, and ta-da, can I save these guys' lives? Sure. You know, whatever, that makes sense.
That was the other thing, too. We never really saw, like, the people that were chosen have any kind of breakthrough in training that would make sense, you know, as to why they were chosen.
As soon as Maverick did it, yeah.
Yeah, no, like, no one ever succeeded, really. Like, we never got to see that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, just because he did it doesn't mean they all can do this.
Them and a bunch of, like, red shirts. I was like, all right, these guys that we've never seen before, wonder who's going to get selected. And the country they were bombing was somehow sophisticated enough to have all that technology and ability to defend themselves, where they had to have such a precise mission, but also inept to where Tom Cruise landed and they're just like, let's just walk on and, like, steal a plane. No one stopped anything. Simultaneously, like, you know, able to do both at once, but whatever, I guess.
Yeah, in what world are our fighter jets not the best in the world? That's crazy that we would have, like, allowed that to happen, have to maneuver in that kind of way just to get something.
And the plane that Tom Cruise and Miles Teller steal has all the, like, stuff in English. And I was like, wouldn't it be in a different language?
Yeah.
So, like, get in the plane, everything's in English. And I'm like, what? Like, wouldn't it be in, like, Russian or something? How would they be able to read it? Whatever.
It was Britain the whole time. We didn't even know.
Yeah, right. Bombing Texas.
I saw this thing online that was like, in, like, the one of the very first scenes, he puts on his jacket, and in the original Top Gun, he had, like, different flags. Like, I think he had Taiwan and shit like that, like, on the back of his jacket, and, like, they removed that shit. So, like, this is, like, literally for a global consumption. We're really not trying to piss anybody off with our imperialism, but also, please watch Americans fuck over this current generation of fighters with shit that was made in, like, the 1970s, because we have a really good pilot and we're the only people with good pilots, you know.
That's a really interesting point, though, because I think this is probably the first blockbuster, like, all year that didn't upset at least one market, because I feel like all the Disney movies had some kind of, like, same-sex relationship or some, like, whatever that needed to be edited out. Like, this is probably the first one that actually managed to scrub everything offensive. Except, I mean, there was a ton of American flags and stuff. Maybe some countries wouldn't be happy with that, but, yeah, it's smart that they didn't really name the enemies, like you said.
Top Gun 3, question mark?
100%.
Probably.
That's why Tom Cruise wouldn't let them kill him.
Tom Cruise is like 70, and they're like, Maverick, he's his grandson. He's got to come back. Only you can guide him.
Nobody could fly a plane like you.
Yeah, right.
50 years since you first flew a plane.
Only unmanned planes for the last 20 years. No pilots even have the training. Since the pandemic, none of us are left because they were all unvaccinated. And you're the only teacher who can teach them. We gotta go in. Tom Cruise, son of a bitch.
I'm in.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm watching that.
Yeah, you know, I would watch the hell out of that.
In IMAX? Are you kidding me? I'll be first in line.
Yeah, I watch it in, like, the Dolby, like, thing, like, the planes do, and, like, my seat was shaking. I was like, oh, fuck.
Someone was saying this was a legacy sequel where Tom Cruise passed the baton off to himself instead of Miles Teller.
Yeah. But actually.
All right, so that brings us to our final thoughts, and with it, our ratings of the film. Nyatva, as our guest, you'll get to go first. So, can you share with the audience what are your final thoughts and your rating out of 100 of Top Gun Maverick?
I'll give it probably 82 impossible to touch circuit breaker switches. This movie could have been incredible, even for the genre, if it had a little bit more substance to it, but it didn't. That doesn't make it any less fun. That doesn't make it any less of a really entertaining movie, but it didn't give it didn't give me all that I was looking for from a movie perspective. From a action movie perspective, it was really good. But from a, I'm watching this for the whole quality of film perspective, I'd say it was good, not great.
Very fair. John, what are your final thoughts and your rating of Top Gun Maverick?
I think I somewhere around where Niatfa is, but I haven't decided. Maybe I think I'm going to go a touch lower and go 80 tons of uranium out of 100. And I think for the same reasons, like it was just kind of an enjoyable watch. Like if you're not looking at it with a highly critical lens, like it's just, it's a fun movie, you know, like other blockbusters in the last year or two that just kind of got people out to the theaters again, which is awesome. Like Godzilla versus Kong, I remember going with Kari. That was one of like the first movies back that you could actually go to after the pandemic. Like this kind of felt like that too. There was just a lot of buzz around it and excitement to just be in theaters, which is dope. So for that, you know, you gotta commend it. And like Niatfa has said too, the action sequences were just really, really well done. And I think, you know, the practical effects and just the way it was acted from the cockpit, I think really kind of made you, it helped us to understand what it would actually be like and things we've touched on before, like putting it in real terms, like how many pounds of force it is, or, you know, things like that, that make it, you know, you can really put yourself in the pilot's shoes and imagine something that's really like kind of incomprehensible to the average person. Like we don't deal with this sort of thing on a regular basis. So I think it was really well done and great continuation of the franchise. Definitely made it for a new generation, but honored the original kind of look and feel and vibe with the music and the dialogue. So yeah, no, I think it was really well done.
Very cool. Kari, what are your final thoughts and your rating of Top Gun Maverick?
Top Gun Maverick was a hell of a line of cocaine that fell just short of an overdose. I will end up rating it 79 planes out of 100, but much higher on an entertainment factor. It is very entertaining to watch from the opening scene where your blood is boiling as Highway to the Danger Zone is playing and their pilots are doing this thing as the planes are taken off, to the final scene where they're rescued and brought to safety. It is a roller coaster the entire time, not a minute of fluff. Although there are some things that could have been added to our point, which I think prevent it from being a great movie. Some of the character development with Jennifer Connelly's character and the pilots, you know, the third act, some of the other aspects. But overall, if you're looking for an entertaining movie, 2 hours of pure joy, pure fun, pure adrenaline, Top Gun Maverick fits the bill. So a movie that I absolutely enjoyed watching and absolutely will watch again soon.
All right. There you have it, folks. That is the conclusion of the discussion by this group of Top Gun Maverick. So now it's time to bring in Stevie P and to hear his thoughts. But before we do that, Niatfa, thank you for joining us today.
Always a pleasure. I'll be seeing y'all on Monday.
So now we have Stevie P. Okay, we are joined now by Stevie P, our other member of the Sunday Movie Squad. Stevie, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Absolutely, and we are excited. Right now we have myself and Stevie P here to talk about our thoughts on Top Gun 2. Our audience has already listened to what Kari, John, and Yatsva have to say about the film. So now it's time to get our insights on Top Gun Maverick. Let's start off with our initial thoughts, just broadly what we thought of the film. Stevie, I'll let you go first.
I really liked the film. Growing up, I didn't watch the original one, but I watched the original one to prepare for the new one. And I enjoyed the original one, the first one, a lot as well. And I feel like the second one, you don't really need to watch the first one to prepare yourself. It does pretty well standing alone, and I really enjoyed it. During the promos and a lot of the interviews, they talk a lot about how real the stunts are. Almost all of the action sequences, especially with the fighter jets, are real, and You can really feel that shit. In the movie theater, you really feel like you're in the jet with them. And no green screen, it just, you're really in it. I really liked it. And I have a lot of respect for Tom Cruise for, you know, he always does his movies real deal. He just loves to be in the action, do it himself. And I have a lot of respect for him for that. Other studios would have just did it in a green screen in a warehouse, but he continued to challenge the space, which I respect a lot. I also am really interested and want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I totally get why everyone is kind of going crazy for this film, because it is action in a way that we don't usually get action. Part of that is because of the special effects. Part of that is just the way it's shot, I think. It is full of fuck yeah moments that had me going, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
Getting excited. The action all works. The minor complaint I saw online was that the character work didn't really work and it was only the action that worked. For me, I thought it all worked. I was invested in the storylines as well. I was invested in everything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like checking my watch or anything to see what time it was. I was invested the entire way and I was into it. So it grabbed me the entire time. I haven't seen the first Top Gun. And like you said, I don't think I missed anything. I was picking up on everything throughout it. I think this film really stands alone on its own. And I don't know if it's an improvement on the first one because I haven't seen the first one, but I will say that I really enjoyed this one and it definitely feels like it's been added to the list of sequels that aren't just a cash grab, I guess, that actually end up being good art as well, because I think that this really was a vision both from Cruise and Kaczynski when they were making this.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking this Top Gun Maverick reminds me a lot of the Creed franchise, which I also love. Like, one of my favorite boxing movies is the first Creed. And I still haven't seen the whole Rocky series, that whole franchise. Never seen the Rocky movies, but I really, really like the Creed movies because they do, you could enjoy it very much just by itself. You get a little bit more out of that if you get more of the reference or some things in the background if you watch the Rocky movies. Same thing with the Top Gun Maverick. You'll get a little bit more if you watch the original one. But, you know, you still very much so can enjoy the new movies.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, I don't necessarily know what I would be gaining from the Top Gun original because I haven't seen it, but I definitely see what you're saying there, that there are, you know, smaller things, but the films do stand alone on their own, and so do the Creed films. So I agree with what you're saying there. Let's talk a little bit about the action in this film, because that's the big highlight. We've already mentioned that it's very practical, but what did you think about the amount of action we got and the type of action, I guess, as well?
I loved it since like the very beginning when they were doing the test flight with the, I don't know, I'm not a goddamn scientist, but that really fast plane.
Yeah.
Like immediately it just grabs your attention. It feels so cool. And right away, like you want more of that action with the jets, with the flight. And then they just keep pounding you with it. And it's just so cool. So fascinating. I think the cast worked really well too with the chemistry. I also love Miles Taylor. So I am kind of biased, but I love the action throughout the whole entire movie.
Yeah, again, this is a point where it's not the type of action I think that you see in most films where it's, I don't know, it feels real in a lot of ways. And that's because of the practicality, but it's also not just that, I don't think. I think it's a lot to do with the directing of it as well.
Yeah.
Because it's just not what you normally see, I don't think. Something about the way it's all put together, it's a culmination of everything. Because everyone's lauding the practical effects, and I agree with that. And it's crazy that Cruise is down to do the crazy stunts, and that's an aspect of it. But I think that there's way more going into this that's making it this moment that people are into. It is. It's like blockbusters are back. Movies are back, baby. And It's funny because obviously Tom Cruise was the one who said that when Tenet drops. He was like, you know, back, the movies are back, or whatever it was exactly. But this is really proof that Tom Cruise is one of those last remaining, if not the last remaining movie star. Because in 2022, there's not really movie stars anymore. We have our biggest names doing streaming shows and stuff like that, which is fine.
Right.
I'm not necessarily lamenting that, but you don't have the big draws of the Schwarzeneggers and the Lundgrens and all those big guys, Stallone, all those big action heroes anymore.
Right.
Even the action heroes of today, like Diesel and Statham, those action films aren't the big blockbusters that they used to be, and those guys aren't the action stars, the movie stars that used to be, and they don't sell tickets the way they used to be, which isn't a knock on them. It's more of the movie going audience, and it's not a knock on the movie going audience either. It's not anyone's fault necessarily, but it is the way movies have progressed, where I'm not the only one saying this, that we've kind of lost the movie star, and Tom Cruise is still a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the record as being someone who doesn't want to do streaming movies or shows or anything. He's like, no, I make movies for the big screen. I'm here for an event.
Yeah.
Because of the way he shoots his films and the dedication he puts into it, I think that he probably is not able to pump out as many films as most people. I don't know exactly. I'll have to pull up his filmography, but I think his last film was a couple of years before this. Well, obviously COVID did that, but he, in general, I don't think is coming out with a multitude of films each year, like someone like Sam Jackson, for example, who's another great actor, but different career styles for sure. Sam Jackson's been in almost 150 films, so different type of career, and neither one of them is better than the other, but it's just interesting that Tom Cruise is this guy. And you were talking about Miles Teller. I have to say, I am biased in the other way. I think Miles Teller is a douche. People have said this online before.
He definitely gives off the douchey vibe for sure.
Yeah, he's got that one of those faces. And I think I've heard some stories, and I don't want to slander the guy, but I've heard some stories like about him in personal life where I don't think he's the best to interact with, or the best even like maybe on sets. I'm not sure if I'm making that up, so don't quote me on that.
I watch a YouTube video about that. Like, he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah, that's what I've kind of heard.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not saying anything about his acting at all, because it's dumb to be like, oh, well, this guy looks like he would be a dick, but he's a really good actor. But because of that, I'm going to not give him the praise as a good actor.
No, I got you.
I think he's a good actor still.
Yeah.
But my thing is, and this is something that people don't necessarily agree with, I saw the movie with my father and he didn't agree with me. So I'm wondering what you have to say about this. But I think that Glenn Powell has like 10 times the charisma of Miles Teller. And I would have liked to see him playing Rooster and Miles Teller playing Hangman instead, because I, the entire time, the movie wants you to be rooting for Rooster and being like, Hangman's a douchebag, he's the antagonist, who's kind of like Iceman, I hear, from the original film, because I obviously haven't seen it, but
yeah,
playing that Iceman type role. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking the entire time, nah, dude, I'm rooting for Glenn Powell's character.
Right.
I'm like, he's way more likable to me than Miles Teller is, and I don't think that necessarily everyone agrees with me on that, but I just had to say it because I think Glenn Powell is great and not getting enough credit in this.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. I feel like also like looking back on all his movies, he always has that douchey character in all of his past roles, which is kind of funny. Something about his face, the way he moves or something. It just kind of got the douchey vibe for sure. I also, right now I'm watching my show on Paramount Plus, The Offer.
Oh, okay.
It's about that limited series about how they made The Godfather. And he's like the main character in it, playing the producer. And he's also really good in that. He's definitely got the acting chops for sure.
Yeah, and that's where I always want to make sure that I'm being fair, to the point where I'm letting it be clear that I just think he's got one of those faces, and I think he might be annoying in real life, but I'm never going to be someone who's critical of a guy's acting or as a woman's acting because I think that they're a bad person. Unless, for example, Jared Leto, I will boycott his movies because he is an actual bad person.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, Jared Leto gives me the exact same vibe. And, like, I don't know. I have a feeling Hollywood keeps wanting to push us that to tell the audience and the public that Jared Leto is a great actor because, you know, Dallas Buyers Club. But I'm going to be honest, other than that, he's just really not that great. I mean, he's all right. He's good, but, like...
Yes, thank you!
Like, he's just really not all that. I'm going to be honest.
He's fine, dude. He overacts a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, for anyone who doesn't know, and I don't know if you know this, but, like, do it, like, 5 minutes of research on Jared Leto as a guy, and he's no good.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors that he's not nice at all, but...
Yeah, it's supposed to be like an open Hollywood secret that he maybe doesn't always wait for people to be of age. And also he runs a cult, which is definitely true. The second part is definitely true. First part, I do believe people who come forward. And so
yeah,
when people come forward and say that, hey, I was 15 and Jared Leto was texting me and trying to get me to go to the after party, I believe them.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a little tangent on fuck Jared Leto.
No, I definitely agree. He just got that vibe for sure.
Yeah. This is releasing on June 5th. Sunday. So the topical thing that happened this weekend, obviously, is that Sony was tricked into re-releasing Morbius because of all the memes online. I don't know if you've heard about this, Stevie.
No. Whoa.
So Morbius bombed. No one went to see it.
Right.
And part of that was because some audiences like me, like I see all the superhero movies. I didn't see this one because it was Jared Leto. So part of it was Jared Leto. He's not that marketable. He's not the leading man that Hollywood thinks he is. Like you were saying, Stevie, they're trying to push him on this. And the audiences just don't like him that much. And part of it is that it's like a side character in, like he's a very small side character in Spider-Man. And then another part of it is that it's Sony universe. So like some people are just not that invested in it. So it didn't do that well, got bad reviews. And then people, even more people didn't see it because of the bad reviews. So it didn't do well. People made jokes about it online. They were like joking around like, it's the summer of Morbius. It's Morbin time. This, that, and the other. There was a whole bunch of memes. A lot of them weren't funny. There was like a couple good ones. But the real stinger of the whole thing was Sony saw all these memes and thought it was like, I think that they knew that the people were making fun of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying that they thought it was like demand for the film. But what I think what happened was they knew it was ironic and they thought people would ironically go and see it then. So they re-released it in 1,000 theaters this weekend.
No way.
1,000 theaters this weekend and they made $85,000 total on Friday.
Oh my God.
So it was an average of $82 per theater, I think, at the end of it. And they just totally misread the situation. So now that joke is actually funny because they tricked Sony into losing money and Jared Leto into like making a tweet about it where like they had like Morbius 2, it's Morbin time in the script that he was reading.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like back to being funny because the studio and Jared Leto kind of got played by it. So just a little, had to note that when we were bringing that up.
Bro, that is so brain dead. Well, I can tell. I actually watched the movie and I fell asleep multiple times throughout the movie. So it was pretty dog shit. So you didn't miss much, right? It's not even worth it.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see the post-credit scene, which is like laughably funny. But anyway.
Anyways, Tom Cruise, Top Gun. Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, we are here to talk about Top Gun Maverick, which is a great film. That was a little tangent that is based on Miles Teller. So there was, you know, it came from a Top Gun Maverick related thing.
Yeah. Kind of related.
But it was, you know, we were talking about the cast and we were talking about how the characters worked in the film. And I think we both kind of agree that they work pretty well, or at least I think that they work better than what I'm seeing online, at least, because everyone's praising it. I mean, the audience score is very high. People are talking about it all the time online. At least maybe I follow a very film-centric Twitter feed, so I get a lot of movie news in general. But people who aren't always posting about movies are also posting about Top Gun Maverick, I think.
Dude, same. Like, that's what I was about to say. Everybody's talking about, because I remember the day before or the day of, I was going to go see the movie. So the past few days, my coworkers have already been talking about it, whatever. But, you know, they're not... they're just like normal people. They don't like go to movies all the time. It's kind of,
right,
you know, it's a fun experience for them. They loved it. I went to the gym, just like random like old dudes, everybody was talking about it. They were just talking about it at the gym. Like everybody, it's such a popular topic, like everybody is talking about it. It's such a fun movie that everybody enjoys. And the movie's been out a week. Like even today, my coworker was still talking about it. Like another of my coworkers just went to go see it and he loved it.
Yeah, it's only been 1 week that it's been out because it came out on the 27th, I think, which technically means I think it was the 26th.
Right.
Usually they say the Friday date, but it was like it's actually the Thursday date because now
Yeah.
The midnight release is now like 7 p.m. They do it so early.
Yeah, everybody loves it. Even like people that don't actually, not the cinephiles like we are, and they all loved it.
Yeah, and that's what we've been talking about actually a couple different times this week. I think on two different episodes, we mentioned the fact that there's limited amounts of films that people go out to see because you and I will go to see more because that's like what we like to do with our free time in general.
Mm-hmm.
Some people only go to it like a couple times a year. The average, I think, American sees less than 3 films a year in theaters. So this was obviously one that got people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say average American sees less than 3 movies
in theaters
in a year? What?
In a year. That's what Gardner told me. So I haven't done any research on it, but I believe him. So I'll have to look it up afterwards, I guess. And maybe if you're a listener and you're listening to me say this right now and you're like, well, that's fucking wrong, then let us know in the comments.
Actually, that makes sense because, like, in the theater, like, people will watch movies at home, like Netflix, whatever. But yeah, that number would make sense because people don't usually go into the theaters a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I mean, obviously we could go that whole rabbit hole of like,
which they should,
how that's hurting filmmakers and how that's actually really hurting like right. The smaller budget filmmakers in general, because like Marvel's going to keep making their Marvel movies. And I know we always seem like we're attacking Marvel here, but we literally do Marvel episodes once a week. We dropped Iron Man 2 yesterday. Thor's coming out on Tuesday. So we like the Marvel movies as well. It's just the landscape of movie going has changed, and Top Gun Maverick is a sign that it can still survive for sure, but
yeah,
it is still a big budget movie that's succeeding.
No, we should definitely make it clear. Movies are meant to be seen in the big screen, all right? You should definitely go to movie theaters to support your movies. And for a movie like Top Gun Maverick, you're not. It's honestly a perfect example. For a movie like Top Gun Maverick, you're not gonna feel the same way when you watch it on your TV. It doesn't matter how big your TV is, you're not going to feel the same way if you have to watch it in the movie theater.
Yeah, and I know Nyatva said he saw it in IMAX, and I'm so jealous because,
oh my god,
me as someone who is very money conscious, I guess, where I have trouble spending money on like the more expensive version of something, or the or spending money twice on something that I feel like I only should spend once on. So if I have the AMC pass, I have trouble then spending money on a separate movie ticket when I'm like, well, I could just go see it for free at AMC.
Yeah.
And instead of going to the local IMAX theater and, you know, buying another ticket. So I always end up at the AMC because the AMC IMAX near me is like an hour drive, I think. So,
oh, damn.
Not necessarily worth it. But for this one, honestly, I was thinking about it. I had to squeeze it in because I've had a busy week and I needed to get it in to watch before we recorded. So I didn't have time to get to the IMAX, but I was really thinking, like, this is definitely a film that, A, you need to see it in the theaters for sure to get the full experience, and B, like, if you can, do anything you can to enhance that experience. And so if you have an IMAX theater near you, I would say splurge on that IMAX watch of it. I haven't gotten the chance to do that, but Nyatva was vouching for it earlier. You heard that. And it just, again, it really is, it's action in a way that's big scale movie stuff. You know, because we've gotten to the stage where, like, we have prestige TV and stuff like that, and we're like, we say the golden age of television, this and the other, or maybe we're a little bit past the golden age now, but still, we're in an age where that line between movies and TV is blurred a little bit, and a lot of people are taking the option to watch new films at home, and new releases really don't have that long staying power in theaters. They go to VOD very quickly, not VOD, but streaming very quickly. A lot of times, not even a month sometimes, and you see them already on HBO Max or something. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And people are choosing that option, but really, you're losing something in certain degrees.
Right.
And this movie shows that that line, that distinction between at home and TV and movies is still there. There is still a difference between the experience of going to see Top Gun Maverick in theaters and watching the new Hulu streaming movie, which I'm certainly not disparaging anyone involved in the filmmaking process of a streaming film or even daytime movie films, like, or straight to television movie films and stuff like that. A lot of talented people who work in those areas as well, and a lot of good movies that come out of that as well. But it is a different experience, and if we want the theaters to survive, we have to, you know, do both. It's fine for the streaming stuff to exist, but if everyone gets too into the streaming stuff, then you lose out on the theater experience. And we've seen, you know, theater closings and stuff with the pandemic had a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah.
There's just, it's a scary place that you could be in.
Yeah, for sure. I get what you're saying, because a lot of people, even, you know, when I was still at Chapel Hill, whenever I would ask the other brothers, let's go see this, let's go see this, they'll be like, I mean, we'll just wait till it comes out HBO. We'll just wait when it comes out as Netflix. They will still see it. It's not that they won't see it. They'll still see it, but they will rather just wait till it comes out on a streaming service than watching it, pay more money to watch it on the big screen. But what we're trying to say is that it definitely makes a difference between watching it on a big screen than on your TV. I was going to say earlier, when you mentioned the other part, watching IMAX, first of all, I had the same experience as you because my AMC doesn't even have IMAX, so it sucks. That's kind of the thing that sucks with the AMC passes. If you have a good AMC close to you, then great, because in Chapel Hill, the AMC at South Point, amazing.
Oh, yeah?
Did you ever go to the AMC at South Point?
Is that new? Or has that always been there?
It's always been there, but they renovated it.
Oh.
So it was really nice.
Because I know I used to go to the Silver Spot. Is that what it's called? Silver Spot?
Oh, yeah. Silver Spot. I mean, it's also nice, but the AMC at South Point is also really nice.
Yeah, I think so. I got my AMC pass right when I graduated from Chapel Hill in 2018. So right about then when I got back to New York is when I did that. I had been, when I was in college, I didn't get to see a lot of movies in theaters. That was something that I just didn't have the time for, unfortunately. I was watching a lot of them at home during college.
Yeah.
I didn't even, because I was, before that, I was, you know, very much into seeing every Marvel movie when it came out. And,
right.
You know, I would even miss some of the Marvel movies when they came out in Chapel Hill because it was just like, no one wanted to come with me. I mean, everyone came for Black Panther. Exactly. We had a whole event for Black Panther. That was fucking awesome.
Right.
We had a whole squad for that. That was sick. Everyone was hyped for that. But when, like, a smaller Marvel movie or one that people aren't as into came out, it was like, all right, when I go home, I'll go see that. But no one here wants to see it with me.
Exactly.
So I definitely didn't have the AMC pass while I was at Chapel Hill. And it's college age kids, I feel like, are probably, unfortunately, in a lot of places, at least in my experience in Chapel Hill, we're not theater bound very often.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely feel that. But yeah, with the AMC pass, I feel like people should also know if they want to get it, they should probably look up the AMC that's near where they live to see if it's worth it for them. Obviously, it also depends on if they actually go to the movies a lot.
Yeah, not to like do an AMC ad right now, but
yeah.
Honestly, this would save you money and make them less money. If you go to the movies twice a month, then you should have the AMC pass.
Yeah.
It's that simple because it's the price of 2 tickets a month.
Yeah.
It's a little bit cheaper than 2 tickets a month for an adult now that they've bumped up because, I mean, the experimental different pricing, like Batman was $18 and other movies were less, stuff like that. But now you buy 2 tickets, it's more expensive than buying the monthly pass. And with the monthly pass, you get 3 movies a week. So
yeah,
about 12 movies a month instead of 2 movies a month for the same price, or for actually a little bit cheaper for the 12 movies.
Yeah.
If you're seeing more than 1 movie a month, it's worth it. But if you're not, it's not worth it. So not an AMC ad.
Yeah, and also depends on where you live, depends on the state. If you have an IMAX theater, really, it's just one movie. It already pays. If you go see an IMAX movie, it already pays for itself for the entire month. So it is a pretty good deal. You just got to see the AMC you live near. Anyway, getting back to what I was trying to say is, I didn't see it in IMAX, but still I enjoyed my experience. But my friend, my coworker, he watched it the first time in not IMAX, the same thing, big screen. He loved it. He watched it again in LA in those fucking 4D theaters. Oh my God. He said it was one of the craziest experiences he ever had in a movie theater. I mean, first of all, I never experienced a 4D theater before. So I always want to do that, but I could only imagine how fucking insane it is to watch that movie in 4D, dude. You could just feel like you're in the cockpit. That's got to be insane.
Oh, yeah. I've never gotten the chance either, but this would be, again, this is the type of movie that makes you want to experience things in 4D, in IMAX.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's like when Avatar 2 comes out and when the first one came out.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That'll be the type of movie that I might actually have to be going to. IMAX theater for, because it's, I know for the first one, my dad and I in 2009 went to an IMAX theater because we obviously didn't have the AMC passes then. So whenever a movie that he thought would be worth it on the IMAX, he was a big IMAX guy. So I think he still likes IMAX, but he was really into it around that like late aughts, early 10s time period. And we would go to a lot of the kind of crazier action films on those, and Avatar was a good one.
Dude, back then IMAX was just getting popular too. Like, it was just starting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it was kind of like the successful version of 3D, because 3D obviously did not stick around, and I'm so glad it didn't because it gives me headaches.
Yeah.
And also, I don't like wearing contacts. I've never really tried, but I can't imagine putting contacts on my eyes.
Dang.
It kind of grosses me out. So how do you wear your glasses and 3D glasses at the same time? You can't. So I just end up not being able to see half the shit.
Right. Like, it's just not comfortable.
So yeah, I'm not a 3D guy. I like that we've kind of gone away from that, but they still do some of their big releases. They'll have like 3D and non-3D
versions, and then like all the non-3D version will sell out so much quicker, and then like if you get there late, you have to watch the 3D version. I remember I saw one of the new Marvel films in 3D because of that.
Yeah, I saw Spider-Man the second time I saw the new Spider-Man in 3D, which, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was cool, but like still, like I definitely prefer to not watch it in 3D.
Yeah.
I also don't want to just put in contact just to watch a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That just seems like such a hassle.
And we were mentioning before, I wanted to bring it up because I did have the chance to look it up. I was pretty sure it was this. And 2018, the last Mission Impossible film was Tom Cruise's last film.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a little bit of a heater right now. And people are really starting to talk about Tom Cruise's late career. Not even a renaissance because he never went anywhere. But right. The fact that he's only gotten better potentially, and that he's making some of his best action films at least now, because we can get into whether or not we think he's better as an action star or better as like a role like Magnolia, for example, because that's what, you know, PTA is one of my favorite directors, and I like Magnolia a lot, and I think that Tom Cruise is really interesting in that role, and I think that he is just a fabulous actor to begin with, and people forget that. Like, people like Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Denzel Washington, and the list goes on, but he's really famous actors who are ostensibly very attractive people, right? Just like Tom Cruise is. It might not be your type, but they're not ugly people, right?
Right.
And because I think they have these leading man faces, all of them, all the ones I mentioned, and many more do, people forget that, no, they're also brilliant actors.
Yeah.
Like with Brad Pitt, for example, one of the favorite things that people say about him, one of my favorite things that people say about him is that he's a character actor stuck in a leading man's face.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. He can do so much different kinds of things, and I just, whatever, I love Brad Pitt. He's one of my favorites.
No, I completely agree.
But I mean, I love all the guys I just named, but I really do think that people kind of forget that Tom Cruise is an action star. He's badass.
Same thing with Michael B. Jordan.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's another good one. I mean, you want to talk young guys, I can, oh, like Robert Pattinson and fucking,
yeah,
well, I know I just mentioned Denzel, but his son John David Washington is maybe my favorite new actor or newer actor.
Same.
He's only been in a couple films now, but he broke into the scene. My Tenet boys, Pattinson and JDW, are my boys, and I look forward to everything they do. But anyway, I think that people do forget that Tom Cruise, yes, is an action star, is, like I said earlier, maybe our last movie star, and is putting his life on the line at certain points because he's doing crazy stunts. And and maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. I'm sure they have a lot of safety stuff, but he's doing crazy shit, and people do die on the sets of films. So there's not a 0% chance that he ends up dying on one of his films one day.
Right.
So he is doing crazy stuff, and he's lauded for that, and he's doing practical stuff, and he's lauded for that, and he's doing cool action stuff, and he's lauded for that, and he deserves all that. But we also have to remember that this man is also just a talented actor.
Yeah.
Take the action out of it. And he's someone who can hold his own against anyone.
He would still be great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Eyes Wide Shut, Magnolia, like I mentioned.
I completely agree.
There's a million of them. He's gone really action more recently, but I just wanted to mention that he has a bunch of really interesting dramatic roles, and then also in his later career, it's almost all action, but his action films are, he's making some of the best ones now.
Yeah.
Especially with people love, I mean, I love that Mission Impossible movie, and I haven't seen most of them, but you can be damn sure that I'll be watching the next one, because that last one was phenomenal.
Yeah, when you mentioned the Mission Impossible, first of all, that whole franchise, I think, made such a mark in terms of action movies. It is such a staple. I feel like what Tom Cruise did with that whole franchise, I think it was the last one, was the one that he famously broke his leg or some shit when he jumped off the roof, or is it the one before? But anyways, I know he was jumping across roofs, and then somewhere that sequence, he broke his leg, like his leg snapped, which I think they included that shot in the trailer and in the actual movie. It was like really quick, but he broke his leg. He's a great actor, but what I love more about him is him as, in terms of the action movie genre, him as a producer, as a director, he continues to challenge this space and elevate the quality in terms of the action movies genre. He always wants to do practical stunts. It reminds me of directors like Christopher Nolan. He also likes to make sure his stunts and the effects are practical. And Tom Cruise, he tries to do as much as he can with his action movies. And you can really tell and feel the difference when you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I don't want to sound like we're shitting on special effects artists.
Right.
Or like CGI artists, because most of the work in Top Gun Maverick is touched up by CGI and stuff like that. And we understand that. And all praise to all those people who are doing that, because there are certain things that you need to touch up. And there's certain things that look better now that we have great technology and great people who are able to use that technology. So Nothing's 100% practical.
There's also like situations, it's like not logistically or in terms of safety, is not really possible.
Yeah.
It has to happen with the VFX.
Right. But if you can do certain things practically and not be lazy about it, it tends to lead to a more organic feeling. And
for sure,
there's a reason why people like the Tom Cruise stuff because of that. And I was just looking into what you were talking about. It was on Fallout, the most recent one, where he broke his ankle and he knew it was broken, finished the take, and was like, all right,
yeah,
that's a wrap. Everyone go home. Take me to the hospital now. And they did so. And everyone was like, all right, let's get our vacation plans ready now because, you know, we'll have a little time off. And then I think that I was reading that the doctors were like, you may never run again. And he was like on set 12 days later filming again. Something crazy like that.
Imagine Tom Cruise, man.
Yeah.
It's so funny, man. That's fucking crazy. Like, that's, you gotta respect that. That, like, the commitment.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
to all of his projects, all the running and shit, man.
No, you don't have to necessarily be like, Tom Cruise is a good guy.
Right.
Because there's definitely maybe things out there that he might be crazy. He's a Scientologist, which we're not going to get into, but maybe not always the best thing.
Right.
But he's also been maybe exaggerated how crazy he is in the past.
Right.
But he's done crazy things as well, but people have maybe exaggerated it to a certain degree.
Yeah, I know there was definitely some crazy stories when he was younger.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was a youngin.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, who amongst us, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, he, I think, unfairly sometimes gets too much discredit for his craziness on the side. But my point is that he's never done anything that I think has crossed too much of a line where it's like, okay, I have to like actually not watch it. Like, he's not like Roman Polanski, for example. You don't need to support him, I don't think, in any way. But Tom Cruise might be the not most normal guy and maybe not the best guy. I don't even know if he is even a bad guy, but he might not be the best guy in the world, but he is a good action star. So that's what we're praising here. And he's a good actor in general, like we've said. But seriously, like what he's been doing in this late stage of his career, he's 59 years old now and coming out with these crazy action movies. So after the age of 55, he's already come out with two films that are praised by critics and audiences for being great action films.
Absolutely.
And obviously he's not the only one. Like Christopher McQuarrie, his involvement is definitely big, and we're not going to take away from Kaczynski for his directing on Top Gun.
He's the one that made the original one too, right? Or is it the other guy?
So I did want to say that his full name is Joseph Kaczynski. I didn't want to just say Kaczynski, like everyone would know that, but Joseph Kaczynski is the director of this one. Tony Scott directed the original, who obviously, RIP to Tony Scott. Tragic story there. If you don't know about it, you can definitely look it up.
The original director died? I did not know about this.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad story in that case.
He died back in 2012. Oh, that is really sad.
Yeah, he obviously struggled with some stuff during his life, and he is notable for being the brother of Ridley Scott.
What? Dude, wow.
Notable for his films, really, but I'm just saying that another notable thing about him is that he's brothers with Ridley Scott.
Wow, I probably just sounded so uncultured. I didn't know any of it. What?
No, I think that there's plenty of people who probably don't know about Tony Scott in general, which is not to say that they shouldn't. And I'm not saying you should, like, you have to know things. Like, people are allowed to know whatever they want about movies. But if you are into movies, I think that Tony Scott's a name to know for sure. And people have blind spots in general. There's plenty of great movies that I haven't seen, plenty of great directors who have only seen some of their work. So there's only so many hours in a day and so many days in a week and weeks in a month and months in a year. So there's only so much content you can consume. So I don't think I blame anyone for not knowing a particular movie or a particular director. I'll just say that there are certain movies you should check out. You know, I'll always recommend movies, but not knowing who Tony Scott is isn't a shot at you or anything. It's not something that you need to know, but
interesting.
It is something that, now that we're listening to it, if anyone wants to know more about him, he's a legendary director, obviously Top Gun, but many more movies. And he passed away in 2012, and they had already began talking about the sequel to Top Gun at that time. And he was involved a little bit in the beginning process of getting this film made. So I don't know how much of that ended up translating into the final product, but there is a fun story about the conversation. I believe it was with Kaczynski and Cruz, where they were talking about a possible sequel, and I believe Kaczynski pitched him two different options, and when he pitched him the one that we see, Cruz was like, okay, he's into it.
That's the one.
Yeah, and it ended with him being like, but we can't call it Top Gun 2. We got to call it Top Gun Maverick. It's a real character piece.
Right.
And he said that, as soon as he said that, Cruz like picked up the phone, called Paramount, and was like, we're making Top Gun 2.
Oh my God.
And it was an immediate green light. They're like, okay. That's the power that Tom Cruise has, which is not surprising.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense.
But like, there are so many great actors and so many powerful actors as well, which is not necessarily always the same. Obviously, there's a lot of great actors who are unpowerful and powerful actors who might be not the best. But anyway, There's a lot of people who are titans of the industry and people who have a lot of pull in the industry. But I don't know how many people could call up a studio and tell them they're making a sequel and then just have it on the spot. Be like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think of other movies.
The approval right away.
Right. And it's not even like the director. It's just one of the actors, or not one of the actors, Tom Cruise. But There was other famous actors in Top Gun, you know, I don't know. But no one's Tom Cruise.
Right. Yeah. Like Val Kilmer.
Big respect to Val Kilmer and big respect to the way that this movie handles it, because he really wanted to be in this film.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I missed it in the promos or something, or the marketing, because I did not expect him to be in this one, because I know he had the throat cancer,
right,
or something, which he's fine now, by the way. He's recovered, but he
just came out with his documentary on his life.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's on Hulu or some shit. I saw it, like...
I think it is Hulu.
Or Amazon Prime. Some shit. I saw the other day.
It could be Prime. It's on one of them. I'm not 100% sure. It's either Hulu or Prime, though. It's not HBO Max and it's not Netflix.
But yeah, he didn't completely lose his voice, but it's hard for him to talk. So I was not expecting him to be on this one at all.
Yeah.
That was a really pleasant surprise.
It's really cool, and people are lauding them for handling it very tastefully.
Yeah.
Because he really wanted, I mean, like I said, he petitioned on Facebook. Not like he had been excluded from it originally, but he just petitioned on Facebook, like, let me be a part of this movie.
Yeah.
And got like a bunch of signatures on it, and everyone was loving it.
Yeah.
And he's a big name too. Val Kilmer is Batman, dude.
Yeah, he was Batman.
He's not no one, you know what I mean? He's not Tom Cruise, I'll give you that, but no one is, like I just said.
Yeah.
People are their own versions of Tom Cruise, like the actors I mentioned before, like those big names like Denzel and Leo, Brad Pitt. They're big names too.
Yeah.
But they're not Tom Cruise. They're their own versions of that big name actor.
Well, back then he was a very big name too.
Val Kilmer always has been, yeah. And I mean, he hasn't been in a lot of stuff recently. Obviously, some of that is health issues and some of that is just aging.
Yeah.
But certain actors are given more allowance to continue to be in movies when they're older, and certain actors aren't. And it's not necessarily always talent that stops people.
Right.
And a lot of times it's even, we can get into it, but like a lot of times it's harder for women.
Right.
When they become a certain age, or there's like a middle period where it's like you can play the young daughter or then you can play the grandma. And it's like they don't want the middle age actors necessarily. But
right.
I can't speak from experience on that. I don't know anything about that necessarily because I'm not an actor or am I a woman. But that is an issue that I'm somewhat aware of and have been told about.
No, yeah, the ageism in Hollywood.
Same thing, I think, with some of these actors. Like, yeah, well, you see, like, renaissances with a lot of actors sometimes, where they call, like, the Kitanaissance or whatever it is. Like, Whenever someone, like, comes back and it's like, well, they were always that actor.
Yeah.
They didn't take an acting class at the age of 55 and get better.
Right, yeah.
They've always been that good. It's more of
just how they look.
Hollywood giving them the roles or giving them the opportunities, and then us as an audience accepting them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
We've been jumping around a lot. I think this has been really fruitful conversation about just kind of movie making in general. I like this because I think it's a good segment on how Top Gun Maverick fits in and how Tom Cruise as an actor fits into 2022 filmmaking and where we are there. I think it's been a fun conversation on that, and I hope the audience enjoyed our insights on movie going, movie making, and whatnot, and how Top Gun and Maverick again fits into that. This was less on like the character study, and that we kind of mentioned what we did like and where we went with that, but we didn't break down the plot for you in this segment. But you've already heard that in the first one. You don't need to to have that here. And you watched the movie, hopefully, so you've seen it. But Stevie, do you have big things you want to mention about this film? Anything that happened in it that you really want to bring up? I don't know, any gripes that you may have? Anything in general?
Not really. I mean, I did not like anything about the movie. I would love the original, I don't know her name, but the original love interest to appear. That would have been cool, some kind of cameo or something, but that would have been cool. But I mean, other than that, like, it's a movie you can't not have fun. You can go by yourself, go with your family, bring your kids, you still have fun. Or you could go like on a date, a movie date, you would still have fun. You don't have to be someone that watches the movie all the time. You have fun with this movie. I cannot recommend enough. It's such a fun experience in the movie theater. Oh, also, I was going to say, Tom Cruise also got the new Mission Impossible coming out, which is very exciting. It looks, all the trailers look amazing. So, I mean, I cannot wait. He's on fire right now, man. With this Top Gun Maverick coming out, it's crazy.
Definitely. And yeah, I just got to reiterate that I think the action, like everyone's saying, is super well done. It keeps you interested the entire time, where it's like just on the edge of your seat, balls to the wall. Not even the fact, like, I went into it pretty confident that Tom Cruise was going to survive it, even though there are stakes in it and there are certain parts of the movie where they want you to think, is this, they call it a legacy sequel,
right?
Where you kind of pass the torch on to the new actors, where is Tom Cruise going to pass the torch on to Miles Teller? And this is going to be the new Top Gun. If they make a Top Gun 3, he would be the guy. But people have joked around that this is kind of Tom Cruise passing on the baton to himself in this, because he survived.
That is fucking hilarious.
It's a very Tom Cruise thing to do, too.
Yeah, that is such a Tom Cruise.
Right?
I'm dead.
I went into it, though, thinking that he would probably be fine. And the entire time I was watching it being like, he'll end up not being the teacher. I was like, he's going to go on the mission. Duh.
Right.
Like, there was no chance that he was staying home for the mission. I knew that the entire time.
Yeah.
And then when they finally did it, where he like broke the, did it by 15 seconds, even less, the thing where they held it was impossible, though he did the test run after he'd gotten kicked out of the military. And that moment, I was like, okay, this is a perfect way to get him on the mission. He was like, well, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. What do I do here, Maverick?
Right.
And it's John Hamm, who I thought was great in this movie, too. We haven't really mentioned John Hamm, but I think he was a good actor in this.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Harris was wasted at the beginning, though. He was very, like, they must have had him for like 2 days or something. They did not have a lot of time with Ed Harris. Great actor, Ed Harris, as well, but just not a lot in this film.
They had more for him, and then they just cut it out or something, because I don't know why they only had Ed Harris for like a little bit. It was like he was barely in there.
Yeah, he's a legendary actor. You get him for such a small role. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, not like he did anything wrong.
I mean, I love John Hamm, though.
John Hamm was great. I think John Hamm was... he's great in anything he's in, but I think he was well cast in this role.
Yeah, I love Mad Men, so I love John Hamm. I think he's a great actor.
He's a great actor, like, both comedically and dramatically.
Yeah, for sure.
But overall, really, I have to say that, yeah, my lasting thoughts on this are that I think the action's really well done. I see why audiences are like, fuck yeah, let's do it. I see why people who don't go to the movies that often are still like, fuck yeah, let's go see this. I see why the word of mouth is working. Tom Cruise, action star, certified movie star, definitely just killing it even in this late in his career. Like I said, he's 59 years old, crazy. And
he's 59?
Yeah.
What?
He's old, man.
I did not know that. That's crazy. He's 59. He's still doing all these stunts.
Yeah.
By himself. No doubles.
Yeah, very cool.
He's doing the real deal. Also, I don't know if we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I think it's like movies like this with all the practical stunts is a good reminder of when we look at the Marvel movies with all the special effects. Also, they do those rendering of all of their action scenes. You can tell that it's a good reminder, like the difference of when action movies do the practical effects and the stunts.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, that's my final thoughts.
All right, so those were our last things to say about Top Gun Maverick. So that means it is time to wrap it up with our ratings. If we have any real last things to say with our ratings, we can add our final thoughts. But here it is, our thoughts out of 100 of Top Gun Maverick. Starting with you, Stevie P, let's hear it.
I'm gonna give it 90 out of 100 fighter jets.
Okay, I swear, I gotta start doing my rating earlier, because we just did Iron Man 2.
Yeah, I wanted to hear yours first.
No, well, this is perfect. I'm giving it 90. So I'm giving it 90 hangmans out of 100. And I had that already solidified. I'm not basing it off yours, I swear. This is what I'm saying. I need to start doing mine first, because last time we did Iron Man 2 yesterday, and we had three people in a row give it an 80 out of 100. And I was like, I was going to give it an 80 before you guys said 80.
Okay.
And I was going to give it a 90 before you gave it a 90. But there we go.
Next time you'll go first.
Maybe I'll go first. Yeah, next time I'll sneak mine in before yours. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll switch it up.
And that's it. That's our ratings of Top Gun Maverick. 90 out of 100 for both of us. I gave it hangmans. He gave it fighter jets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That was our segment here with Stevie P. We hope you enjoyed it. And we hope you enjoyed the entire episode as well. Stevie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
All right, folks, that's the end of the episode. Thank you guys for sticking around all the way to the end. We appreciate all of our listeners, including our new listeners, as well as our recurring listeners. Thank you for subscribing to us and leaving a 5-star review as well. Remember, you can find us on all podcasting platforms by searching the letters GDT. And that's right, we're available everywhere. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the free ones. You can find us, search those letters, GDT. And you'll find us, subscribe, you'll never miss an episode, leave a 5-star review, you'll make us feel good. So find us there, and also you can subscribe to us on social media by finding us on Instagram and Twitter at GoodDataPod and on Facebook at GDT Podcast, where we also post all of our future episodes. So stay tuned for all of our coming up episodes, like tomorrow's episode with Nyatva, and then Tuesday's episode on Thor, the original Thor. Then again on Thursday, we have Kenobi Part 4 and another interview on Friday. So that's this week's episodes. Stay tuned for those and check out our back catalog of episodes as well. That's all. We'll talk to you again tomorrow with Nyatva, but you'll have to wait all the way until July to hear again from this Sunday Movie Squad.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks, Duncan, Kari, and Yatsuba, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Always a pleasure to talk with the fellas about a great movie, and I'll be seeing you all tomorrow.
You don't like this face? The only face I got.
Kari did just put on sunglasses for our listeners. I know this is not a video podcast, but it was a good joke for us to see. It was part of the bit.
That should make it to the Instagram for the teaser.
Yeah, hell yeah. I'm surprised you didn't hit us with some prophecy or something, because at the end of the last Sunday Movie Squad episode, you made a comment about the Jenny Slate character, who is no longer credited as she was.
Yeah, I was right. I was good with that call out. Nah, nothing for this time, but maybe next time.
Nyatva stole the Yale and Harvard thing.
They might cut that, yeah. On Wikipedia, it says Jenny Slate as Debbie the dog mom / Big Nose, a laundromat customer. The character's original name, Big Nose, is set to be changed for the film's digital release due to negative feedback regarding its problematic association with Jewish stereotypes. So there you have it. They listened to our pod and changed the name. We have power. Look at that.